Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 19th, 2026. It's Juneteenth today. Let's start today's reading on the front page with Blue Mound, Winds Shred Meridian School Roof. The Meridian School District was picking up the pieces Thursday after a massive Wednesday evening storm caused devastating damage to the Meridian Elementary School in Blue Mound. Large chunks of the roof of the 11-year-old main school building had been ripped away, exposing the classrooms inside to extensive water damage from heavy rains that accompanied the storm. Meridian Superintendent Shane Gordon said hardworking staff had begun sweeping countless gallons of water out of the building in the wake of the storm Wednesday night, but he said the scale of the destruction was sobering. As for the end of summer and the start of school again, he had grave doubts that would go ahead in the South Lewis Street Elementary building. I would think the prospect of being in the building in 2 months from now would be rather optimistic, said Gordon, 42. I don't see that happening, and so one of the things we're doing is brainstorming what the beginning of the school year is going to look like. But we won't know that until we know the full extent of the damage and what all systems are going to need to be repaired. Architects were on the scene Thursday morning to begin making that damage assessment as work crews, aided by a huge crane, made temporary repairs to try and stop more water damage from coming storms flooding out the building all over again. The scene all around the elementary school's neighborhood was one of smashed and scattered tree branches and toppled trees. One massive chunk of the school's ripped-apart roof was still jammed in the upper branches of a broken tree in a front yard across from the school's parking lot. Gordon said that he was heartened by the response of the community, with people offering to help with the cleanup. And there's about two dozen people that I can see right now here in the surrounding homes that have been affected themselves that are also helping with cleanup, he added. The superintendent said the good news was that nobody'd been hurt, and his message to the community was that help for the broken school was on the way. We're going to work as hard as we can to make sure everything is back as it was, he added. A summer camp being hosted at the elementary school has now been canceled. And on the front page, there's a picture of the Meridian Elementary School. The roof of the school building in Blue Mound was severely damaged Wednesday by a storm that passed through the area. And the front of the school looks fine, but you can see just from this angle that the roof is damaged badly, and some of it's coming off down in the side of the school. And also on the front page, severe weather, storm hammers Macon County. Severe storms that swept through the area Wednesday left widespread power outages, fallen trees, and flooding. The National Weather Service in Lincoln reports a total of 3.13 inches of rain fell on Macon County Wednesday, flooding streets and underpasses, especially in Decatur. While some minor showers could fall in the area on Thursday, the outlook for Friday and Saturday is expected to be dry weather before rain returns on Sunday, said meteorologist Ben Dubelbeis. I hope I pronounced that right, Dubelbeis. Some of the Sunday's rains could be heavy, but no severe weather is expected. Survey crews have been dispatched all over central Illinois to determine if any of the high winds were tornadoes, he said. Extensive damage was reported in Charleston and Effingham County. Ameren, Illinois crews are out throughout the area, said Communications Director Brian Brech. And that includes line workers, tree trimmers, safety supervisors, and damage assessors. The damage assessors in the one-man trucks, he added, are critical because they send the reports to the repair crews to tell them exactly where the repairs are needed. And if you see Ameren trucks and workers and they appear to be doing nothing, to get your power back on is because they're waiting for the all clear from the company that power has been cut to those lines and it's safe to proceed to repair them. With 380 poles down across Macon and Coles counties, it's going to take some work to get everyone's power back on. It takes about 4 hours on average to replace a power pole. We encourage customers to check on elderly neighbors or others who may need assistance during outages, he said. Ameren reminds customers that certain electrical equipment on the outside of a home or business, like the weatherhead, is owned by the customer. If damaged during a storm, this will need to be repaired by a qualified electrician before we can restore power to your home. The winds were the real problem on Wednesday, he said, and did the most damage. In Macon County, about 8,400 customers are without power, Brett said, and about 1,500 line workers, safety supervisors, tree trimmers, and damage assessors are in the field to get customers power restored throughout the area. Most customers in Macon County should have power back by 11 p.m. today, Friday. His advice is, if your power is out, try to leave the refrigerator and freezer doors closed as much as possible to retain the cold air inside the appliance. Macon County Emergency Management is continuing to coordinate response and recovery efforts following severe weather that moved through Macon County on Wednesday. And at this time, no injuries have been reported in Macon County. Local damage assessments and unmet needs surveys are currently underway, said Sergeant Ronald Atkins. These efforts help identify the scope of damage and determine what assistance may be needed as recovery continues. Residents are urged to use caution while traveling, avoid areas with debris or damaged utility infrastructure, and check on neighbors who may need assistance. Decatur Park District Executive Director Clay Gerhardt said that there are numerous trees down in parks all over the city, and Park District staff is working to clean up and open roads, especially in Fairview Park, where residents in nearby neighborhoods use park roads to reach their homes. As of Thursday morning, power was still out at Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater, which was scheduled to host a concert featuring the band Striper later that night. And the front page photo that accompanies this article shows heavy rains that passed through the area Wednesday, June 17th, left many Decatur roadways and underpasses, including this one along Grand Avenue, flooded. So it shows the Grand Avenue underpass, and cars are going through, and water is splashing everywhere. In local news on page A2, County OK study of data centers. Macon County Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield will appoint a committee to study the issue of data centers and present a recommendation to the board at its August 14th meeting. Greenfield announced those plans at the board's June 11th meeting, during which a proposal to enact a moratorium on data center development in the county was expected to be considered. Macon County Zoning Board held a public hearing on June 3rd, at which time it heard testimony both for and against having data center projects in the county. The Zoning Board voted to recommend a one-year moratorium on applications and consideration of any such centers. Greenfield said he has received several communications on the topic, and before bringing it to a county board vote, wants the board to have as much information as possible. In local and state news on page A3, Chicago, come here and hope again. Obama Center opens to general public today. This is from Chicago. Throngs of guests converged on a lakefront park in Chicago on Thursday to dedicate the Obama Presidential Center, a sprawling campus of granite, nature, and art designed as a hub of civic life and culture, honoring the 44th President of the United States. Former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama presided over the ceremonial
opening of the center. An $850 million development that local historians say marks the greatest single investment in a century in the city's long-neglected South Side. Money for the center, which opens today to the public, the Juneteenth holiday, celebrating the abolition of slavery in the U.S., was raised privately through the former first couple's Chicago-based nonprofit Obama Foundation. Among the A-list recording artists slated to perform at Thursday's grand opening was Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen, Jennifer Hudson, John Legend, Common, Christina Aguilera, Eddie Vedder, Bono, and The Roots. Apart from dignitaries, music stars, and other invited guests attending the dedication itself, a crowd of ticketed guests will watched the ceremony, this is in the past now, on a big screen from another park near the center. The proceedings will also be carried on a global live stream. The Obama Center, occupying 19.3 acres of historic Jackson Park on the banks of Lake Michigan, is an ambitious blend of landscaping and architecture, encompassing such elements as a playground, gardens, a concert hall, and NBA-sized basketball court. The center, much of which celebrates advancements in civil rights and Obama's place in history as the first Black politician elected U.S. president, comes as his immediate successor, President Donald Trump, rolls back civil liberties, protections, and diversity programs. Also in state news, Edge of the Unknown, Bloomington, conference to discuss UFOs. This is from the Pantograph. Experts on the unknown are coming to Bloomington Normal, bringing discussions of science, history, and unexplained phenomena, especially encounters with UFOs. The Edge of the Unknown conference will be held from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, June 20th, at the Chateau Hotel and Conference Center in Bloomington, in partnership with On Point Detail LLC and Echo Nova Vision. Tickets are $53 and can be purchased online through Eventbrite, or at the door. The one-day conference will be hosted by Tony Martinez, a news reporter from Roswell, New Mexico, and organizer of the Roswell UFO Festival. The famed desert town is known as the site of an alleged UFO crash in 1947 when U.S. Army forces recovered unusual debris from a ranch in the area. Martinez's newspaper broke the story all those years ago, he said. Bringing this conference to Bloomington seemed timely, the reporter said, given the recent release of Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day. The science fiction film tells the story of the government's cover-up of extraterrestrials. Martinez also noted the popular Netflix series Unsolved Mysteries, recently released episodes about paranormal activity on Native lands, unidentified flying objects or unidentified anomalous phenomena are a popular topic right now, Martinez said. I think the event will bring a diverse group of people together, he said, noting several speakers will present on Saturday. Among them, Bloomington native John Burroughs will share the story of his experience of being injured while serving in the U.S. Air Force in Rendlesham Forest, an area he called Britain's Roswell. Burroughs said he experienced a close encounter and suffered eye damage from radiation exposure. He also had to have major heart surgery as a result of the incident. His medical records are classified, and it took intervention from Senator John McCain for the government to acknowledge it had tried to cover up his story, he said. UFOs weren't a big deal in the 80s. After the event happened, I didn't necessarily think it was aliens, but I knew it was odd, he said, noting he later experienced other unexplained phenomena in Sedona, Arizona. Burroughs said he is looking forward to talking about his experience and discussing UAPs. I hope the event gives the local area a better understanding of the issue, what's going on and what's still taking place, he said. David Childress, an author who appeared on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, will give the keynote address. Other speakers include Jonathan Redbird Dover and Stanley Milford Jr., retired Navajo Rangers, known for their paranormal investigations and UAPs on tribal lands. Mark D'Antonio, the chief photo and video analyst for Mutual UFO Network, and an expert in astronomy and visual effects, and Pat Fresconia, a distinguished attorney and researcher known for his work in high-profile unexplained cases. I hope people show up, and it's a fun time. There will be a Q&A, so we will be able to interact with the audience, hear about experiences they had. Just a fun thing for the community, Martinez said. Just excited. It's a really good lineup. They've all been on TV regarding their experiences, and people can have their questions answered. Martinez said he hopes to see about 100 to 200 people at the Saturday event. For more information, visit edge.echonova.vision. That's edge.echonova.vision. Echo, E-C-H-O-N-O-V-A, Echonova. Okay, and the photo here shows John Burroughs, the right side of the picture, and his lawyer, Pat Fresconia, present their case at the 2015 International UFO Congress. And the two gentlemen are standing on a stage with a podium in front that I can't read what's on it. UFO Congress I can't read it, but the lawyer is standing off to the back behind the podium, and the and John Burroughs is standing on the outside of the podium looking at the audience. Also in local news, fourth murder suspect arrested. United States Marshals on Wednesday located and arrested the last of four suspects wanted in connection with the gunshot murder of a 21-year-old Decatur man, Diamante L. Weaver. The news release from the Decatur Police Department said fugitive Javante L. Reed, 20, was taken into custody at an address in the 1300 block of East Clay Street in Decatur. He was apprehended by members of the U.S. Marshals Service Great Lakes Regional Task Force. Police say Weaver had been killed on May 22nd, and a sworn affidavit listed four suspects as being responsible for his murder. The other three suspects, Kylan J. Walker, 19, Zayashawn J. Estes, 20, and a 21-year-old, Jarvis M. Smith, all from Decatur, had been apprehended earlier. Reed, along with the other suspects, is being held in the Macon County Jail. He's due to be arraigned Thursday, June 18th, in Macon County Circuit Court. Information in previous sworn affidavits about the crime said the four men had gone to Weaver's home in the 900 block of West Center Street to buy weed, and gunfire had erupted shortly after they arrived. A witness is quoted as saying the suspects fled and carried away with them a handgun that had apparently belonged to the victim. Announcing Reed's arrest, Lieutenant Adam Jarris with the Decatur Police Department said the investigation into Weaver's death wasn't done yet. This remains an active and ongoing investigation, and detectives continue to pursue additional leads, he added. Anyone with information can reach the detectives at 217-424-2734. Or contact Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Again, the numbers are 424-2734 or 423-8477. In local news on page A4, zookeepers woo wolves with hot dogs. Officials, no threat after tree hits fence. When a big tree fell on their fence at Scoville Zoo on Wednesday, the wolves, given the choice between Escape to Freedom and a Steady Stream of Hot Dogs chose the hot dogs. We fed them a lot of hot dogs to keep them entertained, Decatur Park District Executive Director Clay Gerhard said. There was never a threat that they'd escape. They're pretty docile. Just in case, a trained keeper with a tranquilizer gun was on hand while maintenance staff worked on removing the tree and putting up new fencing. Both wolves are fine and were not injured, he said, and General Fence Company installed new fencing Thursday. There was some flooding and trees fell over the train track that runs around the zoo, but cleanup is underway and the zoo did open. He said he asked staff if they wanted him to close the zoo for the day to give them time to clean up, but they wanted to open since Thursdays are free days, and they didn't want to disappoint anyone who planned to visit. And there's a picture of Nico, one of the wolves at Scoville Zoo, and he's curious about people walking by while the zoo is closed for the winter season. It's an older picture, I guess. And Nico is a beautiful white wolf. And this is a public interest article. Sleeping in your car at a rest stop, officials warn against living in rest areas. This is from Belleville. The Illinois Department of Transportation maintains 53 rest areas across the state, and they're often used by truckers or other motorists taking a break on a long trek. But is it legal to sleep overnight at an Illinois rest stop? Erecting tents or shelters on rest area grounds is not permitted, the code said. Sleeping overnight on the grounds, benches, or in the building of a rest area is prohibited, the administrative code reads. The administrative code does not directly spell out a rule on whether someone can specifically sleep inside their own vehicle at a rest stop. But Wapple said visitors are not usually asked to leave unless they have spent more than one night there or are causing a disturbance. In recent years, in response to severe national shortage in truck parking and federal rules that limit the number of hours truckers can be on the road, we have allowed trucks to park so drivers can rest overnight, IDOT Public Information Officer Maria Castaneda wrote in an email to the News Democrat. The intent of our administrative rules is to keep people from staying several days and even living at rest areas. The permitted duration of a rest area stay may be further limited when the facility is full or becoming full, according to the code, and notice will be posted at the rest area. How to avoid driver fatigue. Driver fatigue can lead to crashes, and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration recommends motorists follow a few best practices to mitigate risk. There are bullet points here. Get enough sleep before driving, if possible. Avoid driving between midnight and 6 p.m. 6 a.m., I would think. And 2 to 4, I would think this says p.m., but I think it means a.m. Between midnight and 6 a.m. and 2 to 4 a.m. I'm altering that myself. When you're naturally drowsy. If you do become drowsy, find a safe place to pull over and rest. Make sure to eat regular meals, as skipping meals or eating at irregular times can lead to fatigue. When stopped at a rest area, take a nap. Your nap should last at least 10 minutes, the FMCSA reports, but ideally up to 45 minutes. You should allow at least 15 minutes after waking up from your nap to fully recover before driving again. Avoid medications that may induce drowsiness. Some of the most common medicines that could make you drowsy include tranquilizers, sleeping pills, allergy medicines, and cold medicines. Recognize the signals and dangers of drowsiness. Drowsiness indicators include frequent yawning, heavy eyes, and blurred vision. Don't rely on alertness tricks, turning up the radio volume, rolling down a window, and drinking coffee are not real cures for drowsiness and may give you a false sense of security. So, in other words, be careful out there. I'm seeing a couple more photos that accompany the storm damage articles. There's a one photo on page A4, a City of Decatur crew clears a fallen tree from the roadway along South Martin Luther King Jr. Drive as a storm passed through the area Wednesday, June 17th. And there's a lot of branches on the ground and a big cat equipment thing picking up branches. And then there's another photo here of John's Hill Park in Decatur littered with limbs of all sizes after a storm packing high winds came through the area Wednesday, June 17th. And there's a picture of the park with lots of branches near a tree. And on page A6, a state story from Springfield, suit, block, end-of-life options law. This is from Springfield. A federal lawsuit filed last week seeks to block an Illinois law allowing doctors to help terminally ill patients end their own lives ahead of its September 12th effective date. The complaint, brought by medical advocacy groups and Illinois-based a physician and two disabled Illinoisans, claim the law discriminates against people with disabilities and lacks significant safeguards or oversight, violating due process and equal protection. The End of Life Options for Terminally Ill Patients Act, or EOLA, E-O-L-A, will allow doctors to prescribe lethal medication to a terminal patient if they meet certain qualifications and make two oral requests at least 5 days apart. The law was passed in October 2025 and signed by the governor in December. One of the plaintiffs is Ebony Payne, a Chicagoan who is quadriplegic. Payne was one of the opponents to the bill prior to its passage and has continued to advocate against it. For people with disabilities overall, I don't think it's a safe bet because just like me, anybody could have an infection and fall prey to doctors who are not as scrupulous as others, Payne said, referring to an infection she had that led her to tell her doctor she didn't want to live anymore. In that instance, her mother obtained power of attorney and could make medical decisions for Payne when she was unable to. Under the law, doctors are not required to notify family of the patient's decision, and there is no appeals process. But patients must be of sound mind and have a prognosis of fewer than 6 months to make an eligible request. Nobody else, even with power of attorney, would be able to make the decision for them. Many, many people who can't or don't have these opportunities to speak up for themselves. Hopefully, I do well enough job to help their voice be heard, especially in situations like this, Payne said. Oral requests for aid in dying must be accompanied by a written report signed by two witnesses, at least one of which is not an employee of the health facility or a relative or a state beneficiary of the patient. But if a doctor believes the patient has less than 5 days to live, they can approve an emergency prescription. A lawsuit was also filed in New York, joining three previous cases in California, Colorado, and Delaware. Currently, 13 states and the District of Columbia have laws permitting aid in dying. Illinois is the first Midwestern state to legalize the practice. Illinois law is similar to other states, with the basics being copied from Oregon, the first state to legalize the practice. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, June 19th, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.